one of the principal concepts that came out of the Protestant Reformation of the Middle Ages was the idea of the priesthood of all believers, that each person mediates God to others. I know of no more illuminating concept with which to define our responsibility as parents to our children than precisely this. The parent's role is chiefly a priestly role. Now that we may understand that, I would like for us to realize that for one thing, a priest is the one who mediates God to others. He is God's representative. He is God's stand-in. He is not a substitute for God, but an instrument of God, an ambassador for God, one who speaks for God and one who acts in God's name. When people see him, they think of God. And only when such a one makes extravagant and absolute claims do we find this objection. In the proper role, the priest stands as a mediator for God. But in basically the same way, those who have been entrusted with parenting stand in the same role. It is largely through the experiences of confidence and trust and love that mothers and fathers know that there is at the heart of the universe the opportunity to mediate God to those children who have been entrusted to their care. Whether we like it or not, children during their most formative years seem instinctively to invest with their children a certain God, with their parents, a certain godlike characteristic. They seem to look upon their parents as being the representation of God to them. It is only a sharp conclusion if they see their parents are uncaring and insincere and unjust to recognize that God is like that and that the nature of the universe is like that. If they find that their parents are unfaithful to them, if their parents abuse them, if their parents neglect them, then young children begin to get the concept of God and their world from their parents. And their whole attitude toward life and toward their future is determined by the attitudes that they find in their parents. If as parents our moods are changeable, if our love is not constant, if our promises are broken, if our integrity is compromised, if our judgments become hasty, if our punishments become too severe, if we lead a double life demanding more from others than we expect to give, if we ask for respect for law and then abuse it ourselves, if we assume a pious tone with our children and then talk rough with other adults, the whole nature of the life of our children is changed. In a sense, we are priests before God in the eyes of our children. And if we lead a double type of life, in which on the one hand we say that our standard for personal morality is how much can I get away with, or it's all right so long as I don't get caught, and then try to teach our children basically the golden rule and the Ten Commandments, what likelihood is there that we're going to convey to the coming generation a type of morality and a type of security that they rightly need and unquestionably deserve? Parents basically must be moral individuals if they expect morality from their children. Parents not only teach or fail to teach religion in a formal way, they communicate or they fail to communicate to their children in an inarticulate way, perhaps more profound than that which they say to their children. It comes out in something I recently read called A Child's Prayer. Oh God, you are so great and I am so small. And there's so much about you that I do not understand. But then perhaps I understand a little. When I am glad, I know my father and mother love me. Is it you who made them love? When I try harder because they trust me, is it you who made them trust? When I am happy because I've done something kind for someone, is it you that put that kind thought in my heart? Is it you who are in all things that I think are beautiful? If you are, then I know I can love you, and I want to love you more and more. The love of good and goodness of God are not only taught, they are caught. They are not plucked from the air. They are mediated by persons. And generally those persons are parents and grandparents, those who are entrusted with the care and rearing of children. But there's also another role in the function of being a priest to our children, and that is to be a good listener. In the experience of dealing with human struggles, 90% of all counseling is not saying anything. It is not offering advice. It is not even giving suggestion. It is simply listening. There are many persons who need to know that someone cares enough about their concerns to listen sympathetically and understandingly. And really, to listen to another person as he or she unfolds their deepest view, shares with us a bit of their dream, or lets us look for a moment or two at their problem, is a type of confidence that person has in us. And this is the same thing that our children ask of parents. It is not necessary always that we agree with everything that our children are saying. It is not that we even understand everything that our children are trying to say to us. But it is simply that we give them the opportunity to talk and to know that we sympathetically are willing to listen. We have tried to find many answers for juvenile delinquency and for the appalling increase of crime among adolescents. But it may be as simple as the fact that there are not enough parents today who are willing to give the time out of their own busy schedules and their own humdrum lives. Listen to their children and their children's concerns. There are a number of unique opportunities that we have to get close to our children, and sometimes in our hurriedness to do something that we consider more important, we neglect those opportunities. We may brush them aside in order to get on to that which we may consider to be more urgent affairs, when perhaps nothing is more important than that time our children need with us. Do we really know our own children? What are they thinking? Who are they deep down within themselves? Do we allow them to communicate with us? Do we have openness and availability? How often are we willing to listen? And not just to hear the words, but to get their message, the message behind the words. The extreme importance and relevance of this came recently in a letter that was written to the Kansas City Star. It was written by a young boy, a teenager, to his parents, and they shared it with the Kansas City Star in order that it might help other families. Dear folks, thank you for everything, but I am going to Chicago and try to start some new kind of life. You ask me why I did those things and why I gave you so much trouble, and the answer is easy for me to give you, but I'm wondering if you will understand. Remember when I was about 6 or 7 and I used to want you to just listen to me? I remember all the nice things you gave me for Christmas and my birthday, and I was real happy with the things for about a week. All the time I got the things, but the rest of the time during the year I really didn't want presents. I just wanted all the time for you to listen to me, like I was somebody who felt things too. Because I remember even when I was young, I felt things. But you said you were too busy. Mom, you were a wonderful cook, and you had everything so clean, and you were tired so much from doing all those things that made you busy. But you know something, Mom? I would have liked crackers and peanut butter just as well if you had only sat down with me a little while during the day and said to me, tell me all about it. Maybe I can understand and help you. And when Donna came, I couldn't understand why everyone made so much fuss, because I didn't think it was my fault that her hair is curly and her teeth so white, and she doesn't have to wear glasses with thick lenses. Her grades were better too, weren't they? If Donna ever has any children, I hope you will tell her to just pay some attention to the one who doesn't smile very much, because that one will really be crying inside. And when she's about to bake 6 dozen cookies to make sure first that the kids don't want to tell her about a dream or hope or something, because thoughts are important too to small kids, even though they don't have so many words to use when they tell about what they have inside them. I think that all the kids who are doing so many things that grown-ups are tearing out their hair worrying about are really looking for somebody that will have time to listen a few minutes and who really and truly will treat them as they would a grown-up who might be useful to them. You know, polite to them. If you folks had ever said to me, pardon me, when you interrupted me, I'd have dropped dead. If anybody asks you where I am, tell them I've gone looking for somebody with time, because I've got a lot of things I want to talk about. Love to all. A good parent is also a listener. But a good parent also must have the experience of concerned prayer for their children. In this role, we are also priests before God in behalf of our children. Prayer can change our attitude toward our children. It can make us more sensitive to their needs. It can also open us more to their friendship. It will encourage their confidences. And prayer will also surround them with that atmosphere in which they understand that their home is a home related closely to God. What kind of prayers, spoken or unspoken, do we offer in behalf of our children? Is our only concern that our children be well fed, well clothed, well housed, well educated? Are we simply concerned that our children will find a good paying job, a respectable place in society, a nice person to marry? These are all important. But what about their souls? What about their discipleship to Christ? What about their usefulness in this tormented and precarious world in which so many causes cry out for those who will give devotion? What are your prayers for your children? How do you pray for them? How do you pray with them? What about their relationship to their Creator and Redeemer? What do you do in behalf of your children as you offer to them your will as a mediator of God's love and as one who teaches God's nearness? In all ways, we have a divine responsibility. God has entrusted to us the molding of human life as he has given us the privilege of being parents. The ancient wisdom writer, writing in the book of Proverbs, said, "Train up a child in the way he should go, and when he is old, he will not depart from it." We have a divine calling. Parenting is a divine calling. And in the role that we have assumed as parents, we are all priests before God. I also call to your attention that in your bulletin this morning we have reprinted a publication a few years ago of the National Council of Churches of Christ. I think it is something that you could well put at a place where you can consider it from time to time as you endeavor to be Christian parents. In the spirit of the love of God reaching through us to those we love, may we all commit ourselves to the past. God, our Father, we do thank you that you have blessed us with the privilege of parenting. And we pray that these children who look to us may know your divine splendor, your love, your goodness, and your grace as you have given them through us the awareness of that love in parents who show the way to those who come. Pray with you.